Hello, Brooklyn, how you doing? G, where you going? We cannot come to. And if I can, I'm gonna be your man. You can be my lady and have my baby and drive my car. You got me crazy. So however you going, baby, you going? Just
take it.
I'm so sick.
How are you doing? Damn, it feels good to say that again. And that's right. Just like those animated dinosaurs that used a pickup truck like a skateboard, we're back, baby. This is the Russell and Fro podcast with Russell here, here being Austin, Texas, and Fro there, there being Burlington, Vermont, two cities known for their rabid collection of Nets fans. I, Brett the Man Bun Garofalo, virtually sitting across from fan favorite Carl the Talent Jackson. And you know what? I'm not going to spoil any of the piping hot content that we've been brewing up over the past 2 years. We'll get to that soon. Instead, I think it makes sense to transition to the people's favorite part of the podcast and ask our illustrious friend and now father of two, Carl Jackson, how you doing?
I'm hanging in there, Brett. I'm excited to be finished with the clean sweep era, ready to kick off whatever it is that we're moving into. And I feel like you and I both agreed this whole super team thing, not really for us to break down. We're much better at dealing with the minutiae of this kind of thing, heading into a long rebuild. Maybe it's going to take four. Maybe it's going to take 5 years. This is our stuff. This is where you and I thrive. So let's get right to it.
You know, we're not really the most connected individuals when it comes to the National Basketball Association. And that's what I feel like you have to be to report on a team like the Super Team Nets.
No, but we are excited to talk about this one, and some breaking news as well. All our worlds colliding here with the Nets hiring Kevin Ollie earlier this week, former UConn coach. You have any thoughts on that, Brett?
UConn biases aside, I was psyched to see this. The one thing that makes me super positive about it is we don't really have to worry about a recruiting scandal in the NBA. I think the only hope is we don't fall victim to the NBA's biannual fake tampering fine of $25,000 or less that doesn't make a dent in any of the owners' pockets. They're just trying to convince the public that they care. But no, I'm pumped about Ollie. I think that without big picturing it too much, I do think him joining a coaching staff that's made up of now three former Long Island Nets coaches, Nick Claxton's trainer from last year, shows or maybe tips the hand of the direction that the Nets are going with a culture reset and a focus on promoting our own, which also promotes that culture and hopefully attracts more talent in the future. So I'm pumped about it. I think Ollie's a great guy and he's had success in the NBA as well and even praised by Kevin Durant, which really happened. So I love to see it.
That's what I'm saying, Brett. We can't have enough friends of Kevin on the bench, even in the post-Kevin era. So, and listen, he's talked quite positively about Joe Tsai. I saw that his boy Ace was hanging out with Joe recently. So, you never say never, Brett. You never say never. No, I will say about Ollie, I think obviously the way that things ended at UConn was tough. I also want to say you ever have those things where your dreams just start, like random people from random different walks of life just start popping in? Because that's how I felt the past like few months, I guess, with like UConn coming back prominently, with the national championship win. And then all this talk, I don't know if you've been following it at all, around them potentially moving to the Big 12, which is like A, going through the whole conference realignment thing again, B, going through what I think contributed to Kevin Ollie's demise as a UConn coach more than anything else, which was basically moving to a conference where the geographical center was like West Virginia. He's out like recruiting against Wichita State and for kids that are in like Texas and stuff like that, which is my fear about moving to Big 12. But then to fold another layer onto it, who is prominently involved in these discussions but the new president of the Big 12 conference, your friend and mine, Brett Yormark, back in action to bring the Brooklyn Knight into play there. So no, that's been wild, but I will say, like, as a coach, as a motivator, I think of people, Kevin Ollie was definitely displayed plenty during his tenure at UConn. And I think, you and I were at the Elite Eight game where they beat Michigan State to go to the Final Four in 2014, and I know a lot of people kind of don't give him credit for that national championship because it was done with like Jim Calhoun's players, quote unquote. And that's fair, but like in terms of wringing out every last ounce of goodness from a particular roster, like that's one of the best coaching jobs I've ever seen in the league. And that's the only time like I've ever really watched a basketball game where like just in the first 2 minutes, I remember looking at you or Kevin just being like, holy shit, like this, the defensive intensity is just on a different level. Like you can taste it. It reminded me of like at summer camp when the kids would spray the Axe body spray and I'd be like, I'm taking your deodorant away if I can taste it. That is what it was like watching like Ryan Boatwright and Shabazz Napier and those guys just knuckle down. And you look back at that team and like with all disrespect to, or sorry, with no disrespect to Shabazz Napier, one of my favorite Brooklyn Nets, frankly, and UConn players ever. You know, not a lot of NBA history on that roster. I mean, it's really just him, from that team. So, excuse me. Amita Brima also did have a couple cups of coffee with the Indiana Pacers, but really, like, you know, not a ton of pro talent. Even when you look at like the Kemba Walker team, I mean, obviously Walker, you know, grew into what he grew into. Shabazz was on that team as well, and Jeremy Lamb. So, I'm excited for him. I'm excited for him as a motivator. I'm excited for him as a former point guard alongside Jock Vaughn. So, you know, we'll see where it goes.
So would you say the 2014 UConn men's basketball team axe bombed the NCAA tournament?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're still showing up in the, I think second lowest, maybe the lowest, sum of opposing seeds. Cause they beat the number two, they beat the overall number one. So it's pretty incredible run there.
Well, that's why, and listen, when you see coaches change over like that in college basketball, there's usually a ton of transfers and lost recruits. And I think it's a testament to Ollie that was kept to a minimum and he was able to keep the players' minds right throughout that entire season and brought it together at the end.
Yeah, for sure. But so enough about 2014, Brett. Let's turn our faces forward to the future and let's look at what's coming up in 2 weeks. The first day of the rest of our lives as Nets fans, the NBA draft, and just I think a pretty wild scenario where the Nets could really go in any direction. But what we've done is we've narrowed it down to kind of three real possible paths, I think. And then got on the Fanspo machine and cooked up some fake trades for any of those different avenues that they want to go down. So. I'll just go ahead and walk through sort of what those three are. And we can kind of go from there. So I think, you know, for most teams in this position, you know, losing two superstars, you've basically got, blow it up and completely retool. Obviously for the Nets, that's not completely on the table the way it is for most teams, just because they don't control their own first round pick until 2028. And they can't trade, their own first round pick until 2029. So, if we look at kind of like the war chest and what's there, the Nets have 11 first round picks over the next 7 years, 8 of which they can fully trade, 3 of which are encumbered in some way due to the step-in rule. They also have 9 second round picks, all of which are fully tradable. 2 of those first rounders are in this upcoming draft. That's number 21 and 22. They also have number 51 in the second round. They have no picks at all in the 2024 draft. In 2025, they have a swap, so the worst of Houston or their own first rounder. They also have Phoenix's first rounder that year and Miami's second. 2026, they have their own second round pick, but no first rounders. 2027, again, the swap with Houston. They also have a Phoenix first, and they have a top 8 protected first from the 76ers, in addition to Dallas's second round pick. 2028, again, the pick swap different pick swap this time. They have the better of their own or Phoenix's first rounder. They also have their own second and Milwaukee's second from the Jay Crowder deal, pouring out Jay Crowder. We missed a lot of guys' entire 10 years in between our podcasting gap here, but Jay Crowder is definitely the shortest. In 2029, actually, I'm just going to pause here for 1 second because I used to get these guys confused a little bit. And I'm just going to pose a quick question to you, Brett. Better net, Jay Crowder or Kenneth Faried?
Oh, I think I'd have to go with the Manimal. I was more excited about his tenure with the Nets.
I think Jay Crowder's was more pleasant because at least he left instead of being the only guy not to pose for the fun airplane selfies. That was all I remembered about about Kenneth Fareed.
The Nets certainly got more out of Jay Crowder's tenure with five first round picks.
Five first round picks would have been pretty wild, but
second round picks. Jay Kevin Durant Crowder.
Okay, so 2028. Better of theirs or Phoenix is first, their own second, Milwaukee second, and 2029. Get ready. They've got their own first, Phoenix is first, Dallas is first, Brooklyn second, Milwaukee second, and Dallas is second. So pretty exciting time, that 2029 draft. Mark your calendars. Hopefully it'll still be at the Barclays or in space. We don't know.
I mean, that's definitely the crown jewel of all those years that you read off. And one thing that's super important to note between this year and 2029, the Nets do not own a single one of their own picks outside of the second rounder in 2028. So that, oh no, there's another second rounder in there, but still no first rounders. That, that certainly sets the stage for some really interesting scenarios that we're going to talk through.
Yeah, they do own their own first. Well, they own their own first rounder in 2028. They just also have the rights to swap with Phoenix.
Yeah.
All right. And then just quick rundown of the trade assets on the roster in order, in my opinion, of, you know, most valuable to least valuable. Number one, obviously Mikal Bridges, if they want to go that route. Number two, and I'm excluding a Cam Johnson sign and trade here, but that's somewhere in here as well. Number two, I think Dorian Finney-Smith, just his contract, I think is great. Royce O'Neal would be my third. I don't know. Royce O'Neal or Nick Claxton would be my third highest sort of trade value player. Probably Claxton over Royce, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Those guys followed by Spencer Dinwiddie. So that's like a higher money deal, but I think somebody that's on court value is still there and in the right situation would make sense. And it's expiring as well. Then De'Ron Sharp or Cam Thomas, I guess. Joe Harris, I think, is a negative value contract, but it is expiring. I think he's a possible candidate for like a Damari Carroll type trade where he could go to a non-contender and help out as like a veteran and a guy that opens floor spacing for developing players. So I have thought through a couple of scenarios like that. And then and then Patty Mills, which, you know, I think $6 million in filler, good locker room presence, obviously not going to give you much on the court, but, you know, some value there. And then the last one, rapidly increasing in value based on the glistening dewy skin in his Instagram reels, is Ben Simmons. So we'll obviously see what happens there. But I think as we tee up kind of what this offseason means to me, the Nets have basically three avenues, right? One is a full teardown. And we'll talk about, I think they have some interesting opportunities to sort of circumvent your standard teardown process by potentially trading into that number three pick. So we'll talk through a couple of those scenarios. Path A, because they do have this roster that is absolutely tailor-made for a playmaker, they could trade for a star. And obviously we know the one name out there is Damian Lillard, but we can also talk about other options as well. And then path C, which is, you know, maybe the most nuanced, but also boring, it would be sort of holding your powder for a future deal, while at the same time targeting guys that might represent more of a Sean Marks style swing, if you will. Guys at the end of their rookie contract looking for a second chance, guys you can put into a better scenario and potentially upgrade things. So, and then I guess the last thing we'll say before we get into this is just in terms of the needs that the Nets have, I think that's fairly clear as well, assuming you're starting relatively from this roster. And obviously if you're blowing it up, it's a little bit different. The Nets have a ton of wings, a ton of 3-and-D, you know, versatile players in that vein, which is great. And that's something that lots of teams need. They obviously need help with playmaking, offensive organization, that sort of typical lead creator role. That also, I think, need interior girth, don't we all? But I think somebody that can, you know, help play a role, you know, on the on the glass, essentially, helping alongside, like, you know, a Nick Claxton. I think there's an interesting opportunity as well. If you can find somebody like that that can space the floor, you know, you have some interesting opportunities with them playing alongside Claxton potentially in five out scenarios if Claxton were to stay. That sound like a fair rundown overall. Anything else that you'd want to add in?
Outside of maybe disagreeing with some of your rankings, I think that that was a great overview of what's going on. I
feel free to disagree, Brett. That's okay. This is healthy.
Yeah. I love putting De'Ron Sharpe above Cam Thomas. I assume that that's just attitude related and Nets fan, just watching him on the bench all season and having him score 40.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That, yes. I do think Cam probably has a higher value at this point.
Well, dude, the real question is, how many of those players do you think we could get at least one first round pick for?
I think you could definitely get a first rounder for, well, Mikhail for sure.
Mikhail,
obviously. Yeah. I think you definitely get a first rounder for Dorian Finney-Smith. I mean, he's under contract for 3 more years at like $12 million per with the new CBA, you know, rising essentially. Like, I think that's a bargain deal. I mean, I think the other thing is, part of what makes Mikhail Bridges so valuable is not just like the fact that he's, you know, potentially getting into a star tournament. We can talk about this in a little bit, but I think his contract is also pretty amazing too. And so I think that that puts him in a spot where you could pull him in as your third guy, you know, potentially get a second guy for a third guy price essentially. But I would guess Finney-Smith would net you a first. I think that Claxton would as well. I think the only weird thing with him is just that he's an unrestricted free agent after this season and definitely due to get paid at a position where it may or may not make sense to dedicate a lot of money. I mean, you and I were talking about this the other day, like watching Bam in this finals has, I go through a gamut of emotions about Nick Claxton watching that, because I think, I mean, Bam's incredible. I feel like so much of his value is his ability to tussle with guys that are bigger than him, even though he's still kind of getting bowled over by Jokic, which is not necessarily a fair barometer because everybody is, but like his ability to stay on the floor and play bigger than he is so inherent to his value. And I wonder a little bit how much of that you're going to get with Claxton, particularly just given the rebounding woes that we've seen with this team with him on the floor this year. And also offensively, like, I think that's the absolute apex. Although I did see a video of Nick Claxton shooting corner threes today. So I think he was like 3 for, I couldn't tell, the video was on loop, but it seemed like he was maybe 3 for 5. Very exciting. So, you know, like I think there's more to come for him. I think, you know, he's clearly a player on the upward trajectory. I think it's just a question of like, what's his next contract going to look like? Is that going to make sense? And given that you don't have restricted free agency, if you're trading for him, do you feel like you're going to be in a position to give him that contract?
I do think the rebounding woes are a bit overblown based on the type of players that he's surrounded with. I think if we had more size at other positions, not even necessarily like girth at the center position, but if we had more size and people that were better rebounders at the 3 and the 4, I don't think it would be that much of an issue. But he has to take on such a huge burden with a body that's not necessarily built to bang around and grab rebounds that he's just not ideal for this roster if we're specifically talking about rebounds.
Well, and I think, I mean, to me, I think a lot of it is just that you want him switching onto the perimeter. Like, he's so good at that.
Yes.
And that's why, and we'll get into this in a second, but like, I think a lot of these scenarios, like finding a way to unlock him where he's able to play both as a 5 and be the rim protector. And I was really impressed with the strides he made as a rim protector this year, but then also go out and play more as like a roving 4 next to somebody that, you know, can shoot. Like, I mean, honestly, if you pictured him next to like a Brook Lopez where, you know, you could play Lopez and drop and like free him up to be in more of a Giannis type role. Like, I would be really interested to see how effective he would be in that capacity as well. Because I think that's
still my heart.
Because I think like, I don't think it's as much about like, he's too skinny or he's not good enough at like, he's not a good enough rebounder. I think it's more just like, if you want to unleash him to the fullness of his potential, like you want him being able to switch onto the perimeter and doing such a great job at it. And that just means that, like, inherently, like, your center is not going to be down low. And so now you do need other guys to be able to do that. So there are ways to supplement it with other guys on the roster for sure. But, you know, it is, it's just something to think about and consider.
Right. Do we make roster moves specifically to unlock Nick Claxton? And if we're not willing to do that, does it make more sense to trade him? Which I'm sure we'll talk through.
Yeah. So where do you want to start? Do you want to blow it up or do you want to, do you want to trade for a star, or do you want to play the middle?
So I personally think that completely blowing it up is the least likely of all of the options. So I think that we should start there and we should build our way up to most interesting.
So that's
why I wanted to talk about the first round picks.
So I would say that heading into this exercise, when we said that we were going to podcast, I was 100% pro team, like, trade for Dame, screw this. I read Lucas Kaplan's excellent article on Nets Daily, like Alex Sturm's Twitter, and I wanted to, like, do the John Mulaney bit where he's like, and I know these guys are probably older than this, but like, that's such 19-year-old behavior. And as a grizzled, like, 40, you know, nearly 40-year-old, I want to say, like, I don't care. Like, this, you know, you trade for the star, you're probably not going to win a championship. You blow it up, you're probably not going to win a championship either. It's just going to take 15 years and we're all going to be dead by the end of it. Particularly with, you know, the global warming and the smoke and all that kind of stuff. But I'll say, as I've gone through this exercise, this particular trade kind of brought me over a little bit. And I think, to me, the thing is, I guess it's two things, right? Number one, I started getting really excited about this because, A, I think if you can, like, the argument against it is you don't control your own picks, right? So there's no incentive to be bad. There's no incentive to tank. And, you know, maybe you get a good pick here this year, but you don't necessarily get the additional bites at the apple to diversify that sort of risk portfolio. What I like about this is if you were to be able to trade for number three, which is the Blazers pick, which I think is, like, the most obvious answer here, like, that defrays the need to be bad, right? That is the type of pick, particularly with the top three guys in this draft, that really, that's what you shoot for. That's what you tank for, right? So you'd be skipping that step in a way that's helpful. And I think there's something intriguing to me, like what I felt like Sean Marks did so well in his first rebuild, more than anything else, was recognize the uniqueness of the situation that he was in, the constraints that were put on him by not having picks, and find a way or develop a strategy to use those constraints to his advantage. So that was, okay, I don't have my own draft picks. You know, I'm not picking kids, but I have minutes to give, you know, guys that I can find off the scrap heap. I can, you know, find and develop guys that way. And I think they did a really, really good job developing players. And when I think about a situation like this, I understand those risks that I mentioned of, like, you're kind of putting all your eggs in one basket. But if you were to pick Scoot Henderson, let's say, and I think this works for Brandon Miller, I'm a lot less excited about it for Brandon Miller, but that's just my own personal bias. If you were to pick Scoot Henderson, like, who's a guy that I've watched two of his games, right, which were both those Ignite Metropolitan's scrimmages in Las Vegas, like, before the year started. They were fucking awesome. He seems amazing. He seems, like, extraordinarily competitive. Like everything that you've heard about him is, like, you know, the game is, there's a certain things about his game that are a little bit raw, but didn't necessarily have a ton to play for in the G League this year because of the way that the Ignite team is set up. And Sam Vecenie did a great, like, game theory with that other dude that's not Mark Schindler that he always has on, Adam Spinell, like, where they went through, like, all of Ignite and sort of their issues with it that I encourage people to listen to. Like, I feel like he is somebody that would benefit so much from being dropped into a roster where you're not tanking and you're not trying to get your next pick and you're not trying to develop four guys at the same time either. So the fact that you would get potentially him, two other picks in this draft, which is a really, really deep draft. And particularly, I think there are a ton of guys that profile as really high level role players that will be available to them at 20 and 21 that, you know, I think would have the makings of a very nice core. You could pair them with guys that are effective role players at the NBA level right now that you could eventually then trade for picks or younger players, but I just feel like it would create a really good development environment. So the deal that I thought of was a three-teamer where the Blazers would get Mikal Bridges, Dorian Finney-Smith, and the 2023 number 11 pick. So they'd only trade down from 3 to 11. The Orlando Magic would get Anfernee Simons, and the Nets would get the 2023 number 3 pick, which they would use to choose Scoot Henderson, Wendell Carter Jr., and Portland's 2029 first. So from the Nets' perspective, you're running out a lineup of Scoot, Spencer Dinwiddie at the two, Cam Johnson, I'm assuming they'd bring back, Claxton and Wendell Carter as your front court. That Carter, I feel like, is stretchy enough that gives you that flexibility that we talked about where Claxton can get unleashed off ball. I would fill this out. You could go kind of one or two ways with the picks. You could either take two wings. One thing I liked was, sort of taking two wings and sort of having one be a little bit more offense focused, one be a little bit more defense focused. As somebody that watched a lot of college basketball and Big East basketball this year, I penciled in Jordan Hawkins and Omax Prosper from Marquette. But, you could take Sidy Sissoko and Bilal Coulibaly if they're available. The other corresponding move that I made there was basically a salary dump where I sent Joe Harris and Cam Thomas and 2 seconds to Detroit for Isaiah Stewart, helping them kind of clear their front court logjam. That's a guy who's about to be due a payday, who doesn't really fit there, that I think could fit really well here. Their beef stew is your front court girth for sure. And then I'm keeping, Ben Simmons is still on that roster and Royce O'Neal is still on that roster. So, you had that starting unit that I ran you down before, right? Scoot, Dinwiddie, Johnson, Claxton, Wendell Carter, a second team of Ben Simmons, Jordan Hawkins, Omax Prosper, Royce O'Neal, beef stew. What you could also do is keep Joe Harris and spend, one of those picks on one of those guys and the other one on like a Leonard Miller or a Noah Clowney and fill that sort of beef stew role that way. And then whoever your second rounder is, it could be Emmony Bates. You'd still have De'Ron Sharp. You'd still have David Duke. You'd still have Edmund Sumner. So like to me, that creates a team that is probably competing for a play-in spot, right? I mean, if not even better than that, maybe competing for like the sixth seed even. I think, like, depending on how the rest of the East shakes out. So it's a good team. And I feel like that's the best way to get somebody like Scoot Henderson, like, reps and make that investment in his development. And so keeping somebody like Royce O'Neal, like, from an asset management standpoint is maybe not the smartest thing. Like, you should probably trade him and get something. But I feel like, especially with him specifically, like, his versatility, what he meant to this team this year, his ability to, like, bring the ball up and be a creator and, like, do all these things where, like, you're probably not in great shape if Royce O'Neal is you're relying on him for as much creation as the Nets did this year. And that's fine. But I feel like you create a really nice scenario where you've got really clear roles for all of the young guys you're trying to develop. You've got a stay ready group that can easily play him into getting traded if one of those guys, and frankly, at any position, like, makes a case for why they should be there. You could flip him for a couple seconds or maybe a first round pick at the deadline. He's somebody that's going to have that kind of value. So to me, and he's just like a good veteran and a guy that's like clawed his way into the league to have around. Same with Dinwiddie. So, I feel like you've got a lot of optionality there. You can choose what's best for your franchise midseason toward the trade deadline if you want to go all in to compete as hard as you can. If there's not opportunities to give younger kids, like, I think removing the incentive to tank can be really flipped in a positive way for this team. So that's my thought there.
One, I love it. Two, I do think that there's value in holding Royce O'Neal until the trade deadline because I don't think that he's quite worth a first round pick right now. But with the parity in the league, with the injuries that have been happening, there's going to be more than a handful of teams that are depleted at the wing that need an above value or above replacement player. And Royce O'Neal could easily feel that. So I could see Mark sneaking in a first from a team maybe far up in the future that legitimately thinks they can make a Miami Heat-esque run in the playoffs next year. Unless, of course, the Phoenix Suns sign two more stars and go for it before the season and that ish be his plan. $500 million a year for a roster whose average age is over 37. Anyway.
But taking charges, so, that's got to count for something, right? He took a charge in the playoffs. He's the only owner I've seen do that, so.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did take a charge. It was almost like a WWE match. That was high entertainment. I loved it. I was all about it. So breaking down this trade and thinking about it, I think it hinges on two things. One, how much Orlando values either A, Anfernee Simons, or B, the ability to add more shooting to that roster, which has been an issue for them, especially with Jalen Suggs not developing offensively the way that they thought. And Markelle Fultz, who has been an awesome comeback story, still not really getting back to that three-point shooter that everybody thought he was going to be before he was drafted into the NBA. And two, I think it comes down to how much Portland values, or how much Portland thinks Dorian Finney-Smith elevates them into contention. Because I think this is great from the Nets' perspective. Like you said, it gives Nick Claxton the ability to roam by putting a legitimate starter next to him at the five that can man the paint, rebound, still protect the rim. So it doesn't matter that much if Clax is out there wreaking havoc, doing his thing, guarding ones, twos, threes, fours. And it gives, similar to what we did with D'Angelo Russell when we brought him on board, we surrounded him with the shooters. We surrounded him with additional ball handling just to see what we had with him and see if it was worth investing long-term in him. I think that Scoot is a much surer bet than D'Lo was at the time. But just surrounding him with veterans and spacing and shooting allows us to figure out very quickly, do we have a superstar? Do we just have a star? Do we have a starter? I don't know, but at least we'll know right away versus always wondering, okay, cool, this roster was not tailor-made for him. Maybe in the future when he develops and they actually put some wings that can shoot around him, we'll figure out what we have. So it's great from the Nets perspective. So I think it really just comes down to, I'm the Blazers. Does Mikal Bridges and Dorian Finney-Smith make us a legit contender? Or allow us to keep Dame, and is that our top priority? And if I'm the Magic, is Anfernee Simons the shooter that we've been hoping for? And is it worth giving up the number 11 pick to put this shooter next to Paolo Banchero, next to Franz Wagner, and what does that really get us?
Yeah, I think from the Blazers' standpoint, to me, it makes... I think the Blazers would do this deal because... I mean, you're still getting a solid player at 11. You're getting two wings that you need, two starters basically to go in between Dame and, you know, Nurkic. And then, you know, if you're bringing back Jeremy Grant, I mean, that's a pretty solid starting lineup with Dame, Bridges, DFS, Jeremy Grant, and Nurkic. Like that, I mean, that's a team that I would love to root for. Then you've got Shaedon Sharpe off the bench, and you've got, whoever you're bringing in with the 11 pick. I think there's some work, there's some possibilities there. It's probably a little bit of an overpay for Orlando, being that you're including the 11 pick and you're also sending out, Wendell Carter. So to just get Simons is maybe a little light. Maybe that pick compensation has to be 2 seconds or something more heavily protected, with one going to the Nets and one going to the Magic. I don't know. I like the idea of taking that deal, which has been sort of reported or speculated on, of sort of number three and Anfernee Simons, especially if you're going to use number three on Scoot, then like, let's reroute Simons. I guess another possibility is if you think that Charlotte is going to take, Scoot, like, getting Simons and Brandon Miller, like that's also kind of interesting too, because Simons is pretty young. I also think I don't have a problem with, like, I think people get really worried about you have all these guys that aren't on the same timeline, and that's fine. Like, to me, like, I feel like if the purpose of it is let's be as competitive as we can because we have no incentive to be bad, and we want, like, we think that being competitive is going to help bring our guys along. Like, to me, that makes sense. Like, I would rather prioritize the development of the guys that you have, over like the accumulation of assets. And I feel like that's the tightrope that teams have to walk. And I think that's where teams, like, you look at like what happened in Houston this past year, like teams get themselves in trouble where, you know, you're sort of picking this sort of hodgepodge of like different guys, trying to fit them together, trying to see what sticks. And at some point you got to kind of like separate out the wheat from the chaff. And like that can be a difficult and awkward process. Like, I think I like the idea of being able to surround him with a veteran laden team. Nobody, no incentive to be bad, right? You don't have to be good either. Like, to be clear, like, we don't need to put crazy pressure on him, and we can still sell guys at the deadline if it's not working out. But like, it, I feel like it gets you those reps early in your career, and it becomes like more of a superhero origin story, as opposed to just like, you know, messing around. I guess the other things that I was thinking of just with this is, you have his rookie deal, which would allow you potentially to overpay Nick Claxton, like we were talking about before. Like if you're worried about having to give him, you know, a big money contract, the fact that his big money contract is coming in sort of Scoot's rookie deal, and there's a possibility that he ascends to superstar status like during that time range, I think that's helpful. It also helps mitigate the risk of Ben Simmons' contract, in the best case scenario, Ben Simmons comes back and plays really well, and I think they'd be a great pair. And we could talk about that in some of the other ones. In a worst case scenario, you know, Ben Simmons doesn't come back, but as you get every year of that deal that you go through without having that, you know, stretch your books completely, like, I feel like is a win. Whether it ends up being that you're able to trade him because he's more of an expiring, or you're stretching him, either way, like, the years that you can stash him on your roster, even if you're getting no value, even if he doesn't play, even if he just sits on the sidelines and shows off his resplendent sweater collection, like, I feel like the fact that you're eating years off that deal, is big. And so that's a positive. And
I applaud you for your exemplary use of resplendent.
Thank you. That's an SAT word, right? And then, you know, the other thing is too, like, you'd be adding to Frank. I mean, aside from the picks that you make, you'd be adding to the war chest, which is pretty sizable to be able to trade for another star. So maybe you don't have the ability to draft another guy, but you could easily trade for one if you're ahead of schedule. And, oh, by the way, and I don't know if free agency is going to be a thing anymore with the way that the new CBA is lined out, but like, if it is, like, you're still in New York City, and you'd still be, you know, having a really dynamic lead creator. So it seems like the kind of place where you could lure, you know, a free agent as well. So I feel like you're setting yourselves up with a lot of different options. And I think, again, like, I think there's some resistance to this idea because it's like, well, we have to just sell it. We have to scrap everything for parts. We have to, you know, maximize this value right now. And I feel like I really like the idea in a really sort of Sean Marksy kind of way of basically saying like, no, like, let's take our guy, let's develop him, let's be good for a little while. And let's, yeah, yes, maybe being good is, you know, ceiling of the fifth seed and, you know, likely you're in the play-in, but that's fine. Like, those are worthwhile reps. And I think that's a great way to bring a guy along.
Well, I think the only sell anything for parts scenario is if none of these trades pan out. Dame isn't available to us. He goes to the Heat. He stays with Portland. Portland prefers another trade, but besides the Brooklyn package. And then we're looking down the line at some of these other stars out there, and we decide that it's not really worth cashing our chips for that. So we decide to stand pat. And really all that does is it probably bumps up the value of the assets that we have until there are some desperate teams at the deadline or at the end of next year. So I don't think that's a bad option either, because I think what we have, these guys aren't right at the end of their careers, right at the end of their contracts for our highest value assets. I think that could actually behoove us if we wanted to play the blow it up and get more asset games. We would just have to defer that for a year. But I was, you know, one other thing that I was thinking about, this is a completely different thought than that, is what other teams have been in the Nets scenario that have rebuilt to championship contention with this type of not controlling your own picks scenario, but still being in a good spot when it comes to contracts, young talent, roster construction, and having that flexibility. Just a really, really interesting spot to be in. And I couldn't really think of a comparison. I was thinking, oh, you know, the Celtics sort of did it by trading for the Nets picks and then putting a top three pick and surrounding him with other talent, but they still had most of their own picks when they did that. So they were able to stay good while still rebuilding through that. And the Nets are trying to thread that needle. I just don't know what the historical comparison is. And I feel like we're in a bit of unprecedented waters here in terms of the amount of different avenues we could go down and how a potential path back to contention would look.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, and I think that, like, to a certain extent, the circumstances that precipitate this are a little bit of a new thing, right? Like I feel like you know, like, the idea of, like, you know, assembling a big three the way that we have and the amount of picks involved in all three of the Harden, KD, and to a much lesser extent Kyrie trade. Like that I think is just like a pretty unique circumstance. We haven't also really seen, just because free agency has been a bigger deal in the past than it is now, like we haven't really seen something blow up to the degree that the Nets two big three did, in a way, yeah, where like all three guys ended up getting traded away. Like that to me is what's
season unique. Two.
Well, yeah, I mean, all three were midseason of different seasons, but like just the fact that like, well, yeah, actually that, I mean, that's a big part of it too, right? Like they're all deadline deals, but it's also like to have signed two guys as free agents and then traded both away. Like I feel like usually something has fizzled out, right? Like the Heatles, I mean, like I guess the Pierce Garnett, those did end in a trade for two of them, as you may recall. But Ray Allen left, I think, without being traded, right? He left as a free agent. The Heatles, you know, Dwayne Wade stayed until he retired. And Bosch obviously had his health circumstances. I'm just trying to think of like another sort of super team. I mean, you know, Kobe retired a Laker, Shaq, did he go to Miami as a free agent? I don't remember.
I think he signed with Miami.
And then that like the Kobe Powell, like Odom, like that iteration of the Lakers like didn't quite end that way. The Spurs, like, you know, those guys, most aside from Kawhi, you know, mostly retired together. So like I don't know that there is quite a precedent for this scenario. Yeah.
Which makes it even more exciting. I am disappointed that you forgot about the illustrious Dwayne Wade, Chicago Bulls, and Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, the three alphas! I did. I forgot about that. Oh man, I just remember. Remember Dwayne Wade's last game. That was like one of the most fun games. Like the last game of that 2019 season. Like just of all the surreal things. Like that game with like Chris Paul and LeBron and sitting courtside and Carmelo. Pump faking the shot. Like that was wild. And I remember also thinking about because remember that like the Heat, like there was like a legitimate worry that like the Heat were going to be in contention for that last seed with the Nets, and like that was going to be the game where they could have sent him to the playoffs, and like we were going to get the worst whistle, but that didn't happen.
No, it didn't. He had his moment earlier against the Warriors where he banked in a three to either tie it and send it to overtime or win it. I forget exactly what it was, but it was awesome to see. He's not known as a three-point shooter. He was washed up, and yet he was still taking the clutch shot.
Yeah.
Very Kobe retirement tour-esque.
For sure. All right. So anyway, do you have a blow it up deal that you want to walk through, or should we move on to one of these other scenarios?
Let's move on.
All right. Why don't we go to the Dame path? And then because I don't really have very many concrete trades for the last one. They're mostly just naming guys that could be targets. All right. So this one's not necessarily Damian Lillard. It's trade for a star, but obviously he was on the whatever Custer's Last Stand podcast. Dude, I can't keep up, man. That he was on the other day and did list the Heat and the Nets as two priority destinations. You know, the Nets... The Nets again is always because he wants to play with Mikal Bridges, which seems like that could work in the other direction as well. But you know, he did say that. So let's talk about a possible deal and what it could look like. I mean, I guess, you know, first of all, like I said, like I was firmly on this camp. I think I still would be super happy with it. I think it'd be so fun. I mean, like it would be super fun to root for, assuming you have him, Bridges, and Johnson, which I think you would. You know, obviously, I would love for Dorian Finney-Smith or Claxton to be involved as well, but you know, figure right. one of those guys might be in the deal. I think that would be great. I think obviously the Nets roster just tailor made to plug in an elite creator. I think, you know, Bobby Marks put it at the end of in his like offseason report for the Nets that like Mikal Bridges is the best player on a bad team, the second best player on a good team, and the third best player on a championship team. And I think of all the bets that the Nets can make, betting that Mikal Bridges would level up from the third best player on a championship team to the second best player on a championship team is one of the safer ones, I think. Like, honestly, like, I think that's fairly doable. You know, he's a guy that, like, to use the sort of Ben Taylor formula where you, like, you know, like, I think he's, like, an offensive two, defensive two type player, potentially defensive one, two as well. So I think that works. And when you pair him with somebody like Cam Johnson, who I think is like a perfect O3 D3, like maybe your fourth best player on a team, but like somebody who's good enough at both of those things that like he can kind of be in the middle and give you the flexibility to have guys that are a little bit more of a specialist play next to you. Like that works really well. Cause then you've got Nick Claxton, who's probably an 05 D1. And then you've got Damian Lillard, who's probably a 01 D5. And so like, you know, all of a sudden you start piecing this thing together and it looks kind of beautiful. You know, I think also just generally speaking, like we've seen a tendency to trend away from sort of the big three model to sort of couple 10 pole stars and really good supporting cast. I think this would feed into that. If you did need a third star or somebody to play a third star role, you've got, well, I think you've also got multiple potential guys for your second star, right? So you've got Bridges, I think, who's obviously the favorite, but then Claxton, I think his ascendancy into a star or at least sort of a third banana is definitely on the table. And then if he were to still be there, Ben Simmons is also sort of a lurking giant in that regard as well. Plus you got, you know, role players that can grow into bigger roles. Cam, I mentioned Spencer. I think, you know, I know Dinwiddie was frustrating in the playoffs and, you know, I remembered what that was like. But at the same time, I think if you put him to a spot where he is a secondary creator and can play off ball a lot more, I think he becomes just, it just makes so much sense and would click for him so much more. So I love him as like a sixth man type option, which is probably where this would work. I think if you're looking at doing this deal with the Blazers, you're probably using Ben Simmons as the matching salary in my mind. So here's the deal that I wanted to go through. I had sent this to you. Obviously it's a little bit dependent on John Morant's suspension, but just pretend he's playing some of the year next year. So that would be, Blazers get Ben Simmons, Patty Mills, and Joe Harris. They get one of the Nets 2023 picks. That'd be probably I'd give him the better of the two, Phoenix pick. They get Phoenix's 2025 first. So that's two firsts. They get the Philadelphia top eight protected 2027 first. That's three firsts. Okay. And one of the 2029 first, I would be inclined to give up. If I were to rank in priority to the Nets, I would want to keep my own first number one. I would want to, and then I would keep Dallas's, and then I would keep Phoenix's. Unless Kyrie Irving goes to Phoenix, in which case I would trade Phoenix's. So give him one of those. So assume that's that. So that's four first round picks from the Nets. And then I also have them getting a first round pick from the Grizzlies, which I had pegged as the Golden State's 2024 first, but honestly thinking about it, like that might be too good. Like I'd give them a bad first basically from the Grizzlies. So that'd be five firsts. The Grizzlies would get Dorian Finney-Smith just on the back of that first round pick alone. Basically the Nets would get Damian Lillard, Yusuf Nurkic, and Luke Kennard. So on the Nets side, you know, you're running out Lillard, Bridges, Johnson, Claxton, Nurkic, potentially. You've got Dinwiddie, Luke Kennard coming off the bench. You still have Royce. And then, you know, depending on who you take it at pick 22, they're probably in that second unit. You still have your taxpayer mid-level, which you could use on, you know, like a Naz Reid, although he's probably too expensive for that. Grant Williams is probably too expensive for that. PJ Washington is maybe a name I would think about for it, or, you know, or potentially getting, you know, more backcourt help there. But somebody who can rebound and shoot corner threes basically would be what I would look at with that. Especially because you can probably stagger Nurkic and Claxton's minutes if you want to. You could also start Royce at power forward and bring Nurkic off the bench potentially if that makes more sense too. So that's sort of my thought on a Dame trade. I think that puts you, you know, again, I think the other thing is it's a weak East right now, especially if Dame doesn't go to Miami. It's a weak East. So I think it's pretty much there for the taking, especially if Harden goes to Houston, like that kind of pulls Philadelphia out of the mix. Who knows where Brook Lopez lands? Like that could be a big blow to Milwaukee. Like I think, you know, there's obviously going to be a lot of movement and we'll see where guys land, but you know, of all the times to have a puncher's chance, like I think this is a pretty good one. And think of it as a bridge back to owning your own picks. Like that's how I would think of it. I think it'd be a fun as hell team to root for. I would be pumped about it. And really, that's like, what else can you ask at this point?
I mean, I think for a player that's going to be making almost $50 million on the wrong side of 35 to get five potentially great first round picks, there's potential in all of those picks that they would be getting, even the one from the Grizzlies, and a flyer on a former all-NBA, all-defensive player, the ability to control all of your own picks moving forward and rebuild with a Brandon Miller or a Scoot Henderson combined with Shaedon Sharpe, that's a really good situation.
And Simons potentially too, right? Like you'd also have Anfernee Simons.
Right, and you have Simons and you're dumping the Nurkic contract.
Right.
Which is, it's not a great contract. It's a good contract for a team that is going all in and doesn't care what our salary is next season, which is what the Nets would be doing. But I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I think part of it is the Nets are, I mean, the Nets are paying one way or another to dump Simmons' contract, right? So the fact that you get Nurkic, who I think helps with a clear need that you have, while also flashing like maybe enough three-point shooting that you can kind of squint and maybe play him and Claxton together, particularly if Claxton develops his handle like a little bit more. Like that's a problem that I would sign up for, right? Like that is not, I'm not saying that that's going to work or that's like a great plan A, and starting them is maybe a little bit.
Like you have time to suss it out and then solve it at the deadline.
Right.
If it doesn't working out, you need to bring in an additional piece because we have other pieces that we can flip for parts and additional picks that we can flip as well.
Right.
So the other piece I wanted to chat with you about is the Grizzlies piece of this. I do think that trading for a DFS, especially with the culture reset that they might need after the Dylan Brooks fiasco, after all the things going on with Ja Morant and what seems to be a fake gun based on recent reports, I think that's great. And I think that would be more than worth it for them because he's a proven deep playoff rotation player, and he's a proven culture guy that can play next to stars that have a track record of being a little bit ornery, like a Luka Doncic or some of the Nets players. I am interested in the Kennard piece of this because in the playoffs, I think that he had either the highest or the second highest plus minus on the team, mainly because he was the only one outside of Desmond Bane that can shoot on that team, and having that type of shooting around Ja and around Desmond, around the rest of those players really, really opened up the offense for them. So I think this one comes down to how easily they think they can replace somebody like Kennard and how easily shooting is available to them. Like, do they pick up a Duncan Robinson? Is there a Seth Curry that we throw in there to replace that for them? I'm just not sure, but I think he might be more valuable to them than we would think after that playoff run, even though he's like valuable from an eighth or seventh man perspective.
Would you? So that's fair. I mean, Seth's free agent, so I don't think he could get tossed in. Would you do it for if you got Tyus Jones back instead of him? If you're the Nets?
Yeah, I would. I think I would too. The goal of the trade is to get Damian Lillard and then figure it out.
Right.
So if we're getting Tyus Jones instead of Luke Kennard, that's fine, and then we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, we can always flip Jones if he doesn't fit it on the roster, but here's the deal. Dame's old. The Nets have been really, really cautious and conservative with older players and any sort of nicks and knacks they pick up throughout the season. So, yeah, we're going to need somebody to come in and play heavy point guard minutes, and Tyus Jones can do that. He's not a proven playoff performer, but that's fine. We really just need him for the regular season to make sure Dame's healthy going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I kind of like that. I mean, to me, the framework for this is you get Lillard, you're willing to take on Nurkic because even though that contract is not great, he fills a need. You know, like there's a clear on-court need, but also given his injury history, like you're not putting him in a position where you're completely reliant on him. Like, I think if he went down for half the year or something, they'd be fine. And it lets you, you're going to have to get the juice with the picks because you don't want to completely decimate the team. And that's why, you know, again, like I'm always trading Dorian Finney-Smith, which is a bummer because I really like him. Also in that 2014 Final Four, by the way, lost to Kevin Ollie, so they could talk about that. That could be a fun thing that they talk about. So I love rooting for him. And I don't want him to go, but I feel like of all the guys, like he's just the best asset there. So what that's worth. In terms of like, I'm just trying to think if there's. Go ahead.
So where does that team rank in the East for you? Because that's one thing that I was thinking about when you were talking through this. I would say still below the Celtics, still below the Sixers, still below the Bucks. It is so tough to rank.
Are they really below the Sixers though? If Harden leaves, are they below the Sixers?
So if Harden leaves, they would not be below the Sixers in my opinion. But I think that this is all a leverage play by Harden to try to get a max contract out of the Sixers. I don't think he. I'm sure that he has friends and family in Houston and loves it down there. But that guy knows what a championship would mean to his legacy, and he knows that he's not winning a championship if he goes back to Houston. This is pure Brett speculation, but I just think that would be a ridiculous move for him, and it would really take the Sixers saying, we're going to pay you 60% less than you are expecting to get for him to get pissed off and leave. I think it's all media leverage.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess I'd have them. I mean, I think we need to see what happens with Boston in the offseason, like in what sort of reactions there are to sort of what happened this year. I think they're worse than Boston, but I think they could beat Boston in a series.
Agreed.
I think they're worse. I think that's probably true of all of them. And that's assuming that like everybody comes back and nobody moves around, right? Because even if everybody comes back in Boston, like you're still like Horford's still a year old. I mean, Horford's pretty old at this point, right? Like, and I think he opens up a lot. We're assuming Grant Williams is coming back, although they didn't even really play him, and like who knows like what that relationship
Celtics
is like.
Celtics fans hate him. He was out of the rotation. I can easily see him signing elsewhere.
But I feel like those are kind of two big swing pieces for them, because without another big that can space the floor, like I feel like what they've been able to do with Robert Williams, I don't know. Like I don't really see a way for them to take a huge step forward from where they've been. But obviously what is on the table is like, they could just like put it together and just like not have the games where they just like fuck things up. Jaylen Brown, yeah, they would still have to dribble though. So that's like, that's a minus. Milwaukee. I mean, it just depends a little bit on Lopez, right? Like, you know, I think just if he signs elsewhere, I kind of don't think he will, but if he did,
he won a championship there and resurrected his career.
He resurrected the career in Brooklyn under Kenny Atkinson, to be clear.
Well, then he went to the Lakers and pitched him.
Well, that's so fair. He's
pretty low after that. But I agree that the Lakers, I really hated what they did to him. I mean, it's weird because I think I would have to put the Nets sixth. I think you can't put them above the Cavs or the Heat based on what the Heat did this year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really understand how to adjudicate the Heat. I think you could put them above the Cavs. Although the Cavs have the most runway for internal improvement, so maybe not.
Agreed.
I don't know.
They make a couple shifts to how they run their offense. They could be a juggernaut. I really do believe that. I think coaching is the thing holding them back, not necessarily roster construction. That's sort of the hole they have at the three.
I guess it's.
And it pains me to say that with Karras.
I guess it's deeper than I thought, but I don't feel like it's like. I don't know.
I'm not saying that we couldn't beat those teams. I'm just saying I see it difficult to finish above those teams in the regular season, given that we're not going to be playing Lillard heavy minutes during the regular season. And if we are, then we're in trouble.
That's what you get Tyus Jones for.
Yeah, absolutely.
But no, I get what you're saying.
He's our guy.
And also, yeah. Let's not forget, Mikal Bridges is going to play 84 games.
Well,
he's going to suit up for two for a different team.
So you're telling me this guy is going to play all the FIBA games over the summer, then come back and still not miss a game?
Yeah.
This entire season?
He hasn't missed a game in like 3 years. That was like his main concern when he got traded. It was like, you know, him and Cam like sitting down, looking at the schedule, and Cam being like, don't worry, like you might play 83.
The other shoe's got to drop at some point. I just hope next season's not this season.
Yeah, that's fair.
So the other question that this raises in my mind is, So let's say this doesn't make us a legitimate contender. We're a fringe contender. We'd have to get a little bit lucky, go on a Heat-esque run. We're still not going to be as talent-dearth as the Heat going into the playoffs. Is there another trade that if you pull this off, Damian Lillard helps you swing? That would improve the team. And the reason I'm asking that is I couldn't really think of a worthwhile one.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious... The obvious second name would be Bradley Beal. The math gets a little math gets a little fuzzy. I mean, just because they've got a new front office there, you know, it's been, I mean, it's so similar, right? Like, it's just been on the table for so long. Offensively, it fits pretty well. Defensively, I don't know.
I mean, listen, Nets fans are going to hate this because this name was brought up ad nauseum and ultimately was not the savior for preserving the KD life raft that we had. But Pascal Siakam's on an expiring deal.
Oh, I mean, that would be perfect. I mean, if they, you know, if what a great running if Toronto's open to that, yeah. I mean, I think if you could fit him in, if you could fit him in without losing Bridges, which I think you could, but maybe you'd have to lose Johnson at that point. Like,
I think we would have to lose Johnson, but we maintain enough picks based on what you constructed that I think we could trade for Siakam.
Yeah, then that would be pretty filthy. I mean, and you could probably use Nurkic in that deal too as salary match. Yeah.
That to me, if we were going to construct a team that I could look at and say that is a definite inner circle contender, that would be it. I think Dame and Siakam is an incredible pair.
Yeah.
And I do think the Raptors are teetering on the edge of what the heck are we going to do? Are we going to blow it up? Are we not?
Well, and Dame Siakam and Bridges is like insane. Would be really good.
Insane.
And you know, you could do that. You might have to include Clax as well, which is maybe a calculated bet that you'd be willing to do at that point. Or if you could keep him, I mean, like if you keep him, that'd be pretty sick.
Yeah. The problem is he really seems like a Masai Ujiri kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You have Dinwiddie's salary as well. So you could get to the number pretty easily. Especially if you got like a Tyus Jones back and you wouldn't need Dinwiddie as like a, in a backup point guard capacity. Yeah,
that is my best case scenario. That's I think if everything breaks right for the Nets, I think we end up with that team. I don't really see a better option for us. And that would, of course, Portland would have to be open to trading Dame. We would have to either outbid the Heat or the Heat for some reason wouldn't be interested, where I can't imagine why they wouldn't be interested because they have the picks.
The only way we'd outbid the Heat is like if they don't care or want Hero. And we just have more picks, basically.
True.
And especially in that scenario where like you're turning Finney Smith into another first. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like that. I like that a lot. I haven't done the math out to like if you can pay everybody, but I guess if you're getting rid of, I mean, you have Dinwiddie coming off the books, that's 20 million. I mean, honestly, you could probably, Dinwiddie and Nurkic would probably get you to the number.
That
you'd need for Siakam.
And one of those players would help, especially if Fred VanVleet's gonna sign elsewhere.
Yeah, if he goes to the Lakers or something. Although Chris Paul is, so who knows? But
Chris Paul, Kyrie, and Fred are all going to the Lakers.
Yeah. All right. So then let's talk about path C. Any other stars you think would be worth targeting, I guess, just real quick. Like we don't have to do a full deal, but
no, I mean, I wrote down a lot of names, and it seems like the next best option after this is Karl Anthony Towns. And the only reason we're trading for him is if we already have another star that we brought in that we think that Kat somehow fits well with the star in terms of roster construction, it would put us over the top.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be interesting, and there's like a fun like jersey connection there. But
maybe a Chris Middleton, but again, I would only be looking to trade for somebody like that on a sign-in trade if we already had another star that we were bringing.
Right. All right. So then let's talk about like neither of those two things happen. We hold our powder and effectively defer for a year. Figure we could go star hunting in the future. I think the other thing that I read today too, just to throw it out there, is kind of bridges these two options. Is like part of why the Dame stuff is coming up is like just with the new CBA, like there's a much bigger market for him right now. And this is why I think Beal might move this offseason as well, in addition to there being a new front office. Like there's a much bigger market for him right now than there will be the year after, because next offseason, just because it's going to be more restrictive. You're not going to be able to be over the cap. You can be over the cap in a way right now and then make your salary machinations. But after in a way that like, you know, brings you under and brings everything in line. So, so that's part of why like that might happen. And another reason maybe to think of it this year, but if you are holding, there's more guys available in the future, potentially. What I think makes the most sense and what we talked about was looking for guys that are second chance guys, end of a rookie deal, potentially, guys that have moved around a little bit that, you know, could be good reclamation projects. Maybe they're not a star, but, you know, could turn into a frontline player, and you keep your picks, your cachet of picks there, you know, to potentially go in for a star in the future. That could be to augment that person. So, you know, one thing you could do is try to fill the playmaking need one way or another now, you know, keeping most of the wing infrastructure intact, and then, you know, either use that to make a pitch for somebody else to come there, or, you know, go all in on a trade there. So I don't have a ton of deal. I have one sort of deal that we can talk about, but, you know, mostly just wanted to talk through some potential guys that we've talked about. Talen Horton-Tucker, Colin Sexton, both, you know, playmaker, point guard types. Cole Anthony, who was recently at whatever that gala was with like a bunch of Nets players that Nets Daily got into the whole like, you know, conniption about. Like those are guys that sort of come to mind for me. Gabe Vincent would be another who's a free agent. I doubt he would leave Miami, but definitely, you know, somebody that I think could make a ton of sense in a way that, like, you know, below the superstar level, but like could get this team making sense, in terms of guys that could fill that sort of front court need. Like, I think PJ Washington would definitely be on that list as like a sort of small ball 5/4 guy that you could pair with like Claxton to play like 4-on-offense, 5-on-defense kind of situation, and not necessarily need him for rim protection. So those are some of the names that I'd sort of thought about, floated around. Do you have any others that you thought through? And then I've got a deal that we could talk to as well.
Well, so really the thought process is we're back in Mark's wheelhouse of trying to identify potentially undervalued talent, or talent that might not be undervalued, but talent that the teams just don't have an appetite to pay because they're no longer going to be on a rookie contract and they've found other assets that they value more. That's the premise.
Yeah, that's my thinking there.
I mean, there were certainly some fascinating names that they don't necessarily exactly fit what you're talking about. I think they're names that already got their money and might be used in the wrong role on their current team. And I don't think that this would happen just because it would be wild. And the that comes to mind there is somebody like an RJ Barrett, who I think could be a lot better in a smaller, more defensive-minded role and is paid and used like he's a star because he was drafted so high, and that's what the front office might think of him. So I think there's potential players like that out there that the Nets could also target if we were going into undervalued asset, try to acquire players that could have higher ceilings than other teams think and may want to get off of their contracts, where we don't care too much about cap space and contracts because we're not looking to go all in, and we also don't have any of our own picks to really tank and get that high draft pick.
Do you have any other examples of that?
So what's another example of that? Oh man, I would have said somebody like Dylan Brooks, but he's on an expiring.
Well, you know, I mean, that he would be probably available in other ways, I suppose.
Yeah, that's certainly an undervalued asset right now.
Yeah, that's,
or maybe properly valued.
All right. Well, I can do.
I mean, Jordan Poole.
Yeah, could be another. Yes. So I had meant to include him on the list. I think a Finney Smith for Poole, or Royce, or both of them, for Poole could be like a really interesting look or thought there. Definitely, Kuminga also. I don't know that they would be as willing to part with him because Poole, it sounds like there's some vibe issues there. Obviously with the Draymond situation. But like I've read some reporting that's like, you know, generally maybe not endearing himself super well to that locker room. So, you know, if he's somebody like, I think he fits that need, and I think you can, you know, you give him, it's his own thing. You give him some space to kind of cook, and you put, you know, defensive infrastructure around him to make sense. And you flip back to Golden State, you know, a guy that could come in and be like, kind of an Otto Porter replacement, but like Otto Porter and Drain, like not replace Draymond, but like augment him, I think, in a way to take some of the load off of him in terms of, you know, who he's guarding. A little bit of like almost like an Iguodala kind of replacement as well. Could be that I could definitely see that being having some potential. Another one that I thought of, just because every trade that I mocked has to involve the same team, was Royce and Dorian Finney-Smith and a first for Anfernee Simons. You know, one of the first, I don't know if that's the Philly first or that's sort of a lower tier one. Maybe you put extra protection on the Philly first. I don't know. But like that could make sense, right? If they're trying to split the baby, keep Dame, draft Scooter, Brandon Miller at three, Simons become, you know, could easily become somewhat redundant there. This gives them the opportunity to put, you know, some solid wing defenders around them. They could both play next to Jeremy Grant, or with Jeremy Grant. I don't know about next to.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that makes the Blazers a lot better. And I think, you know, from the Nets perspective, like that's a guy who comes in, fills the playmaking void, fills the scoring void. And you know, you'd still have, you know, you can start him and Dinwiddie at the same time. You'd still have Bridges. You'd still have Cam Johnson. You'd still have Claxton. So like, you know, some of that defensive backbone is still there, even if you're depleting it somewhat. So I think that's an interesting way just to sort of deal from your surplus to pick up somebody else. You're not, you still have the full cash there in the future too. If you want to trade for a star, if you wanted to pull the trigger on a Siakam deal or something like that, you know, that's potentially still on the table as well.
I mean, it's a wonderful way to truly evaluate what you have on Simons, because this roster is tailor-made for a no defense, all offense young player like him.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously your ceiling is not as high, but you know, you see what you have there. And I think kind of your thought too of like, see what you have there and then figure out like who's the additional guy that could come in. You know, Siakam, ideal target because he brings some of that playmaking void, or he fills some of that playmaking void as well, while also enhancing the defense. And you know, if you flip Dinwiddie and Joe Harris, you'd still be on your team. That could make the money pretty easily. You take some of the picks that you would have thrown at like a Dame trade. And now you're talking about like Simons, Bridges, Johnson, Siakam, Claxton. Like that's a pretty fun roster as well.
It's a really fun lineup. This may sound crazy, but Tyler Hero is another name that fits right into that as well. If we think that there's more upside with him and the Heat want to add some more veteran pieces to make another run next year, I think that's interesting. And I think you could have a similarly constructed trade to what you just built with the Blazers, Ron, DFS, and a first. Or maybe less than that, because Hero, I think I would probably value Hero less than somebody like Simons due to age.
Is it because of the bucket hats?
No, I like the bucket hats. It reminds me of the late 90s.
Are bucket hats cool again?
They're not cool again, but they were cool when I thought I was cool, and that means a lot to me.
That's true. I had a couple bucket hats.
Maybe it's a nostalgia thing. Here's another question. Do you think that Jalen Suggs could potentially be available based on how he's...
I thought about that. You know, I don't, I do. Yes. I think just particularly, I mean, they have two lotto picks this year, right? So, you know, I think there's plenty of potential to add other guys. I know he hasn't quite worked out, in terms of what they're looking for. I don't know that he fits super well with this team as presently constructed, just as a sort of defensive minded guard, but again, if you're dealing from the way that this team is constructed to bring in somebody else, like he could definitely fit that bill and be an undervalued guy too. And I don't necessarily think you can have too many defenders.
I just think if you're deprioritizing roster construction, he could be an interesting guy to go after. And the Magic could really use somebody like a Spencer Dinwiddie if there was a way to include him in that trade and potentially get back more from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. I think, you could do like a Dinwiddie for Suggs and Gary Harris or something like that.
Give them a floor spacer
potentially. That could be kind of interesting
theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I've definitely he was in that Scoot trade that I had at first at one point, and kind of went in a different direction. But But yeah, I definitely think he could be interesting for sure.
So the only reason I think that this route is anywhere near exciting is because I believe that it is right in Sean Mark's wheelhouse. This is what That's he true. Does. He's really, really good at looking at players that could potentially have more upside than other teams view. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, bringing them in and putting the roster around them to evaluate what he has and bringing in other guys that might fit with them well. So I feel better about that route than I would if we had a different GM, but it's not the one that I would prefer. I would prefer to go big or go home on Scoot, or go big or go home on Dame, and see if we can make a run of this.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the least exciting, right? So that's a bummer just from that, in that regard. I do think it is. Yeah. I think it's prudent in a lot of ways. There's a lot of good things, but I do think if you have the opportunity, yeah, I like Sean Marksing the Scoot version a little bit better. Like the, if we're going to do the Dame thing, just fucking let's do it, man. Like a connection for you. What beer did Sean Marks bring to the Brooklyn Block? And who is featured in commercials for that beer, Brett?
Oh, wow. I don't know.
Modelo. You haven't seen the Damian Lillard Modelo commercials with the the Jay-Z, Ennio Morricone, Ecstasy of Gold's beat going on in the background?
Maybe I missed that Dame was in those commercials because I love that song. I actually just bought the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly vinyl.
Oh,
the
other day.
Yeah.
He's not in all of them, obviously, but there is like one of him. There's a cool like Brooklyn Oakland thing going on. So.
I mean, Dame is a legitimate hip hop star.
It's true.
Dame where Donald. Else would you rather be than Brooklyn? Miami is not really the place you want to be.
No, it's not a reggaeton star, so.
No, he doesn't want A-Rod sitting courtside.
Right, which would be also, weird because he owns the Timberwolves, but
Either way, I was just saying that because he and Derek Jeter were at one of the Heat games. Do you remember that?
Yeah. No.
And they were talking about the 3-0 comeback.
In the Boston series?
Yeah, in the Boston series.
Oh, I did see that. I did not watch that game, but I did see like photos of it.
Yeah, I don't know why, but A-Rod and Jeter were both there, and folks were like, ooh, shades of the Red Sox.
Amazing.
Listen, long story short, though, rooting for the Nets is fun again.
It is. I think so. It's interesting. The Kyrie, the ham-fisted Kyrie to, or Kyrie trying to recruit LeBron to Dallas news was just very, the levity came to my being upon reading that and realizing that wasn't my thing to care about anymore. That was pretty, pretty wonderful.
It's so nice that we don't have players manipulating the media to take shots at the organization. Now we don't have to worry about our young stars dating porn stars while having babies with other women. And there's lots of positives out there.
Although
have to worry about
recently implicated in a different porn star, potentially baby scandal. Our very own Bruce Brown. So I don't know if you caught that one. But
I missed that, but you know what? I'm proud of him and I'm happy for him.
Me too. I'm very, very happy for him on the court and, seems nice off it as well on the hardwood.
That's scandalous.
So we should probably wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up. Listen, the rap is a little rusty.
Probably wrap it up.
It's been a while, but we're excited to be here.
I was gonna think. Just thinking of the draft and potential picks and landing spots, and we talked a lot about Orlando Magic. Is there something where I had a thing that I tried to write as a joke to you guys on the group thread today that I couldn't quite get into shape. And I'm wondering if you'll workshop it with me here for a second. I feel like there's a joke about Magic Johnson tweeting about the Orlando Magic picking Grady Dick. Him saying this guy thinks he's Magic Dick, but I'm already Magic Johnson or something like that. Is there a joke there? I think you should just tell the people where you can find work, Brett.
There's a joke there, but I can't think of it fast enough. Man, I don't know where you can find us. We'll be on Spotify. We'll be on Apple Podcasts. Does Breaker still exist? I don't know. I never listened to a podcast on Breaker.
Who knows? I'm
pretty sure Stitcher's still out there. They were probably acquired by who knows? Who knows what? Consolidation. That's what happens in a recession. All these companies probably own each other at this point. But if you've got a podcast app, we'll be on there. Guess what? Our email address, russellandfro@gmail.com, it still exists. Do we use it as a second email account to log into fake other accounts? Absolutely. Yes. But we expect mail. We can still get
is my to inability to log into that the reason that I'm still subscribed to Matt Book's Patreon? Probably. But I'm going to leave it there through the finals. Go Nuggets.
Yeah, leave it there as long as Jeff Green and Bruce Brown are on the
I think
Nuggets.
That's fair. And DeAndre Jordan, let's not forget.
Yeah, that's true. Culture
king. Dude, the fact that they're going to drag DeAndre Jordan as a bench-only player to a championship is just the most hilarious and the best possible punchline to the entire Nets era. God. And I think that's what we close on.
Yeah, I agree. Jeff Van
Gundy
was crazy.
Play us out. Yeah. With hard knocks, better than Berkeley. They said you murdered me by the time I was 21. That shit disturbed me, but you never hurt me. Hello, Brooklyn. If we had a daughter, guess what I'ma call her? Brooklyn Carter. When I left you for Virginia, they didn't offend you, cause you know I only stepped out to get dinner. Hello, Brooklyn. How you doing? Where you going? Can I come soon? I can't, I'ma be your man.
That's our back.